All right, we are back. PoundCH9 Live. Hashtag tweet questions. We have Vice President Jason Zander here. He runs DevDiv, Visual Studio, CLR, all of that goodness JavaScript, that you guys use, JavaScript, .NET, C++, all that stuff, man.
All the fun stuff.
All the great stuff. So right off the bat, here we are at TechEd Europe 2012, and I've been hearing this sort of DevOps kind of word going around. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, we talked a lot about it in the keynotes and those sort of things. The developer and operations, pull those two things together. Really what it comes down to is if you want to continually deliver service value, you want to be able to ship as frequently as possible, it's just no good anymore to just go build code and throw it over the wall and then do some operation stuff. That you actually have to have that work in a very good cycle. Mm. And so we've been investing heavily in tools on both sides, in Visual Studio as well as System Center, so that you can actually get sharing, because I want the source code to work, you know, in both directions, right? Mm. So the common example you have is I write some code, I hand it over to you, and you're in ops, and you deploy it, and you say, hey, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I'm like, give me a call stack. What's a call stack? I mean, there's nothing in my tool System Center that does that. It's like, well, we've added that. Right?
Excellent.
So if you see an issue, you can escalate it. We'll go figure it out in the software, get it pulled back over, and then vice versa, and that makes us both be able to work together a lot closer. So you can ship a lot more frequently.
Excellent. Now, in terms of like when you have code executing in a real environment, like somewhere in the cloud or a web server or something, you also have the idea of events, where I can register for, you know, events specific at sort of not at the method level, but at some level in my code, and they fire, and I know it makes my debugging experience much easier. You guys have done a lot of great work in that area in .NET 4.5 and ASP.NET.
Well, I mean, and there's such a large spectrum, you know, starting from just normal kind of tracing and figuring out how things is going. And then on the high end, then we've also added support for IntelliTrace and some of the tracing features out of the monitoring support. And that's where, for example, we can start to collect full call stacks, full IntelliTrace logs. You know, that way, by the time I get the bug, I can actually pull it up in the debugger to look at it. And all of those are relevant, right? I mean, you want some of the health sort of stuff. You want kind of the events and monitoring pieces in there. And they may want the advanced diagnostics kicking in too. So I think that whole spectrum is in there and important.
Excellent. We're now just magically transported into an airport.
And into a train station.
So I think they're
station.
Calling our flight. Yeah, it's
That's
a train station.
It's 635 to Munich.
It's fine. We have mics on, so it's fine. I actually like it. It's real.
Yes.
You recently made a relatively big announcement around, I mean, LightSwitch and its support for HTML5.
Yes.
Why is that a big deal?
So I think LightSwitch is a really, it's a killer application. Right?
Okay.
I mean, what it allows me to do is very quickly build, especially line of business style applications. So lots of data, lots of forms and screens, you know, put those things together, and it's a lot of the same patterns. Now, we have that working today, you know, just fine for on the desktop and in the browser for, you know, the Mac as well as on Windows. But one of the things we're seeing is there's so many different types of devices that are out there. You might have iOS devices, Android devices, slates, tablets, smartphones, all the rest of those. Mm. And HTML5 is the best way to go reach all of those clients. Mm. So by adding the ability to build companion applications with your LightSwitch app, you can now just go in and say, I want to add a client, HTML5. And the cool thing is with LightSwitch, you know, we give you the default screens, right? So you don't actually have to do anything different. At that point, we'll run it on the server, like on Azure or Windows Server. And when the forms come down, we generate jQuery mobile. So we're just using standards-based, you know, HTML5, CSS, JavaScript. Yeah. All of a sudden, you get yourself a nice mobile application with your screens and everything else. So
Excellent.
It's a real productivity win, and it gives you a ton of reach.
Cool. And, I mean, I remember when we first sort of talked about LightSwitch, have you seen it being used a lot? I mean, clearly you're investing in it, so it must be a successful product.
Yeah. No, we've gotten a lot of pickup on it. And in particular, it's best used when the time to get a solution out there is what's critically important to you. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of examples where that, you know, it winds up being the case. It's not designed to be a replacement for like my tier one credit card transaction processing system. That's not the target, right?
Sure.
We have Visual Studio Pro and, you know, MVC and a whole bunch of other technology for that. For LightSwitch, oftentimes departmental applications, you know, want to build a small application where it might actually take you longer to get in the queue for IT to have them build it versus, you know, being able to have your local department build it. And then also sometimes if you're a small, medium business kind of consultant where it's more about let me get out there and give people a solution as fast as possible. So mm-hmm. it's been very good for that. Now, we got a lot of requests since we shipped the first version, and we added the ability to split apart the server and the client version. That's what helps us with the multiple types. And we also added OData support that allows more team members to be able to collaborate and start building on top of it. So we've gotten a ton of people that have picked it up doing that kind of stuff. So
great.
Pretty cool.
And you're a big believer in HTML5.
HTML5, I think, is super important. I mean, the way I would describe it is, like we just talked about, if you want to get maximum reach, then standards is the best way to do that.
Sure.
Right? So HTML5, you're going to have a browser everywhere. We're going to make sure that that works. Now, we put first-class support for that in Windows 8 Metro-style applications. You can build those with HTML5 and JavaScript.
True.
Now, that said, you know, so that's our standards-based play. You know, MVC, you know, web forms, those all are great for exposing websites back out. Mm-hmm. We use a lot of jQuery mobile in those solutions. That gives us great support. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, we are also investing in our XAML stack as well, mm-hmm. right? So we've got a bunch of investments on the desktop stuff. You know, Visual Studio is written in WPF, for example, so we've got some stuff in there.
Yeah.
And then Windows 8 Metro-style apps, I can also build those with XAML, mm-hmm. right? So we have both kind of markup systems in there, new versions of Blend, new versions of Visual Studio to target all of that. But those are kind of your technology choices.
Excellent. And I actually also really like the reinvigoration around native code in DevDiv.
Yes.
I'm really happy to see that. I mean, that's where you come from back in your day of coding on the CLR.
I have written probably orders of magnitude more C++ than any other language. So, yes, I've
So it's nice to see the language modernizing and us supporting it, and their tools are doing really well. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's rock and roll, man. Language features, when you think about, like, I had Dustin Campbell on here earlier today, who's
great.
A dev on the Roslyn team,
the IDE
side. That's actually quite an interesting project. Can you talk a little bit about, like, language features, .NET language features?
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm glad that you covered that, because it's an important area. Within Visual Studio 2012, and the latest versions of Visual Basic and C#, probably the biggest thing I'd call out there for language innovation is async.
Yeah.
That's such a common pattern, and making that such a much easier way to program and putting that right into the language is awesome. And then we've added a whole bunch of stuff to kind of bring the two languages into decent parity, so you know that works well. Mm. Roslyn's exciting because that's our kind of future of those compilers going forward. Mm. So you have a VB compiler written in VB, right? And instead of having the compiler be a black box, we can actually export the kind of interfaces out of that, and now I can actually program against it.
Yeah.
So I'm sure in a session or whatever, he's shown the interactive window, right, which is kind of cool. I can write C# in an interactive window, just type it in, hit enter,
which is like
a REPL loop. And usually you have to have a scripting language to do that, but this enables that kind of support. Internally, it's also great for us because what it enables us to do is we can actually keep the compiler code base itself much more in sync with the code that runs in the IDE, you know, the editor helpers and that kind of stuff, and that actually allows us to move faster internally. So then we expose it to everybody else. You can write more powerful tools.
Yep.
So I think it's going to be very, very cool.
Totally, and I think you're probably going to end up seeing, like you always do, people using it in ways you're like, wow, rock and roll, man.
Yes, and it's designed for that this
time. Yes, so, right on.
Sometimes people use stuff like that, and we didn't design it for that.
Yep.
This time we did, so it's good.
So we want questions at CH9Live for Jason Zander. We have one right here. With new features in .NET 4 and 4.5 parallel libraries, what would help gain perf boosts in apps without huge code audits?
Yeah, and I think the question is, we've done a bunch of stuff around parallel, you know, programming.
Yes.
So we did a bunch of stuff in .NET Framework 4.0, and we also have symmetry for a bunch of that in C++ as well. Mm. And in that particular case, underlying libraries, tasks, those sort of things as well. And we also included in the debugger the ability to go through and do debugging at a task level. Mm. And so you're able to kind of see what that looks like, and then, you know, your profiling as well. So those are the, you know, kind of intrinsic sort of pieces, right? I need libraries, sometimes language features, and the tools to go off and go debug, and you'll use those.
Sure.
The libraries are often interesting because I find, and I've written a bunch of parallel code, like you mentioned before, I was part of the original CLR dev team, so we obviously paid a lot of attention to that. I've often find that the patterns that slow people down is mostly the common sort of mistakes, which I think is, you know, what the person is referring to with code audits.
Yeah.
It's sharing of state, you know, bleeding of state back and forth, and then getting your lock and lock synchronization in the wrong kind of context. You get the big bottlenecks, you know, where things don't stream through very quickly. Mm. So, you know, those are the sort of things that usually cause problems. So from a strategy perspective, if we can give you a library that's easy and straightforward to program to, and that avoids you actually doing some of those common patterns, then naturally the code that you're authoring gets to be a lot better.
Right?
This is where, you know, tasks and assigning things to tasks so that they complete, and the locks and the composability of those, so the framework library gives you that. Then after that, having the tools go through and check out the race conditions, et cetera, is good. And if you're Mark, who was just up here before, he probably is still going to go audit the code and make sure that you didn't screw up. So
for sure.
I probably want him reading through my code and telling me if I screwed up. That
would
be good.
So another question we have for you is, when should I use Team Foundation Service versus Team Foundation Server?
Yeah, that's a good question. So Team Foundation Server is what we run on-premise on top of Windows Server and SQL Server. And that one's definitely designed to support teams of any size.
Okay.
In DevDiff, I've got a little over 3,000 active users per month going on our DevDiff database. That's tens of millions of lines of code. We do builds every night. We're hovering at this version around 12 terabytes of data.
We
had 17 terabytes worth of data in the previous release, Visual Studio 2010, .NET Framework 4.0. You know, so it scales to a huge sort of counts.
Nice.
Now, with Team Foundation Service, is the cloud service where we're bringing the same functionality, but we're putting it on Azure. We're running it as a platform, as a service, you know, thing. And of course, we export it as software as a service. And it's really great because I don't have to worry about the kind of setup and provisioning and all that kind of stuff I otherwise have to do. What you should expect is that over time, the service itself will catch up with all the feature levels that we have on the server.
Okay.
So we'll definitely get it there. But it's not there now, and that's mostly because as we're pulling the features over on the service, we want to make sure that it scales properly, and we're actually taking the time to truly make it a service and take advantage of the underlying pieces, as opposed to just throw a VM up in the cloud and just like plop the same thing down. We could have done that, but we're actually taking the time to make it a big scalable PaaS offering. So what that means is it will take time. So the service itself right now is probably best for teams of 5 to 10, probably around the 5 range is a sweet spot, where I'm doing, you know, decent sized projects. You know, I want Agile and Scrum, you know, I want builds in the cloud, some of the basic testing, and then if you're using Azure, you can do a nice kind of continuous integration, continuous deployment. Great for those sorts of things. We're still in preview, so you know that it's on the roadmap. But if you're a big team, use TFS. If you're starting off kicking the tires, you're a small team, then the service is probably a good answer for you.
Excellent. Now, we hear this term a lot, especially in the last, like, I guess, year and a half, and that is modern developer. So, like, the modern is the new active. Remember back, active X and active this and active that.
Yes.
So the modern this and modern that. Modern developer, what is a modern developer, Jason?
Well, the way I think of this is we're seeing a whole bunch of changes in how people write, author, deploy software, and go work with it. And so we've had a big era of client and server and being able to do that. We've gone through eras of data centers and all the rest of that kind of stuff. Right now, you know, very typically, if you're going to, you know, crank out, let's say, an app that you want to put up in an app store or, you know, that sort of a thing, you're probably going to have some kind of cloud and service component, and you might have multiple clients connected up to it. And if you were to go off and go author that, you're using all, you know, sort of modern techniques, which thankfully a bunch of them are making it into enterprise and mainstream development as well. I will be doing things like using, you know, Scrum and Agile practices of various sorts. I get, you know, testing and quality built in up front. I'm going to wind up using continuous integration, probably using continuous deployment, right? Then I'm going to be actually a lot of your modern developer, a lot of developers today, they're very typically learning 2 to 3 programming languages. It's not uncommon at all. I might use like a .NET, C# VB on the back end, write my business logic. I got some SQL and those sort of things, and then I might use JavaScript if I'm doing maximum kind of reach. So I'm able to kind of converse and work in all of those. And you know, you're working in a model that's actually very, very fast. You know, is how you go through the system. So it's good because our software development practices as they've kind of evolved are allowing you to move in that kind of rapid progression. So multiple language, modern development techniques, you know, getting stuff out there, handling tons of devices, and you know, kind of scaling it up through cloud services and that sort of stuff. I mean, those are all kind of, you know, modern patterns, and I see a lot of people kind of, you know, moving towards that.
Absolutely, and the whole new sort of the marketplace model of app installation being download, unzip a package and boom, as opposed to write to the registry.
Huh? Yeah, you know, yeah. Well, I mean, and of course, the models have, you know, basically wind up supporting you doing that.
Yes,
right.
It's actually quite brilliant. I like that model.
Yep.
So we have 15 minutes left. Please tweet some questions to Jason Zander. So Jason, one of the questions I'll ask is, in the Express SKUs in this context, the targeting platform, because it used to be like each one was for a language. Like I would have Visual, C Sharp, Express. Then you guys decided to go the platform route. Can you talk about? It's actually a good decision.
We've actually had platform targeting too, and we've had a phone Express SKU for quite a while.
Of course.
Right, so for Windows Phone, and the web SKU itself was also about building websites.
True.
So it's been pretty targeted towards that. So we had that, and then we had some language SKUs as well. So there's kind of a weird sort of inversion. Like some of these things are not like the others. Yeah. And so what we did for this release and what we will have for the 2012 wave, we'll still have a phone SKU.
Right.
And still have that one. We have a Windows 8 Metro style Express SKU that helps you target that one as well. Mm-hmm. And we'll continue to have the web SKU, so those three SKUs will be there. Mm-hmm. And we recently added the desktop SKU. Mm-hmm. And what that one allows you to do is also now target desktop workloads. So if you want to go build the WPF app and all those sorts of applications that we have for Windows desktop, then you can do that as well. Mm-hmm. The phone SKU and the web SKU and the Windows SKU all support all the languages. Right, so I mean, you'll have, whatever the underlying platform supports, but whatever the underlying platform supports, those languages are also there in the box. So if you were a C-sharp programmer, you're going to be able to program in all of these. Yeah. Same thing with Visual Basic, JavaScript works where JavaScript works, the client side, that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
So I think you get the broadest spectrum that's there. And of course, Pro can build all of it.
Absolutely, it's great. I mean, C++ again.
And C++, yes.
I mean, you can write Windows apps in native code.
Yes, you can. And you saw it with the Windows Phone 8, I can write them there too.
Yes, you can. That's really cool.
With the new version.
It really is. Very exciting times, especially for you guys in DevDiv, since you're building, the interface into actually creating these applications for customers.
Yes. DevDiv's a lot of fun. I get to play with all the new toys.
Totally. So how is the performance in 2012? I know you guys have done a ton of work.
Yes.
Vance Morrison, your performance architect, and...
Advance is on the .NET framework of the CLR team in particular, and then we've got some others on the Visual Studio side too.
Yeah,
it was a huge amount of work for this release. So we made it an explicit feature, right? Mm. We actually did two things: and put a core team together that is basically working at here's the automation pieces that we want, here's the tooling we're going to do internally, the runs for perf and all that, getting a whole formalized sort of thing. And then each of the product units also put additional people directly on performance for this release. Okay, so, and then the first thing that we attacked was virtual memory. Mm-hmm. Why do you attack memory? Because if you use too much memory, that is a perf problem. It's a reliability and a perf problem. And so we actually posted a whole bunch of details up on the team blog that explained, why we did that. But we went from scenarios where we actually dropped hundreds of megabytes of memory usage for exactly the same scenario.
Huh.
You know what I'm saying? So we found issues like that we needed to go fix. So we went off and fixed those. When your memory goes down, the operating system runs faster. Right, the size of the heaps gets smaller, so the collection and everything, all these things contribute. Then after that, we went through, we instrumented things like IntelliSense.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hit the period in a language and it goes off and says, here's what you might be meaning, turns out there's a lot of going on underneath of that.
I'm sure.
We can trace every single thing that happens and then look for anything that shouldn't be there or things we need to speed up, that kind of stuff. So
awesome.
I think people will find the perf is good. The last thing I'd say is that we did not change the requirements on the box for 2012. Mm. Right? So you'll actually, if you get to the 2012, exactly the same machine requirements, and you should find that things run actually faster.
Excellent. Now, you remember when I interviewed you in your office about when we were in the Visual Studio 2010?
Yes.
And you were able to say, if it's starting a little slow because of what we're doing with loading the whole CLR into memory, WPF stuff, you could turn it off. Remember, you were able to tell it.
There was software rendering versus hardware rendering.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You still have that? Have you guys made...
We do have the option. We definitely have the option in here. This actually has a lot more to do with the graphics drivers for hardware and DX in your graphics chip. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we found is that when we deployed Visual Studio 2010, at the time, we were actually finding a lot of issues with drivers the graphics drivers. And what would happen is they would say, yes, underneath, we'd be using WPF, which is using DirectX, which is then using the drivers, which is then using the chip.
Yeah.
And some of those drivers did have perf issues. And we actually found both reliability issues and the different in performance issues if we turn on hardware rendering. When we hit those, we added the option in the dialogues that you can turn that off.
Okay.
And we added some auto detection stuff. Now, since then, the good news is all of the browsers, Internet Explorer 9, for example, and IE 10 have done a really great job doing graphic acceleration and really worked with the hardware ecosystem, and all those drivers have improved, and I've really not seen this being an issue at all with this release cycle. So
excellent.
The whole ecosystem is getting better, which is good for all of us.
Absolutely. So Richard Hine has a question here. Which version will support IntelliTrace?
Yes, Visual Studio Ultimate.
Okay.
Will support IntelliTrace. So that's, oftentimes the question is, hey, why is it in that one? Why isn't it in this one? Which is a fair question. Basically, when we go through and plan where the features live, we usually go back and try and figure out who is the SKU for and what kinds of scenarios do we want them to go off and do. And Ultimate, for example, is a really great version of the SKU for kind of like a lead, engineer that's doing a particular type of work, whether that's a load testing sort of scenario or if I'm doing some advanced diagnostics, whatever that kind of looks like. And we generally try and go in and balance the features out so that you get a nice flow through the SKU. Otherwise, it's kind of a weird, I need that to do this, but not this kind of thing. Mm. So Ultimate is definitely designed for that. Whereas I think of something like Visual Studio Professional, that one's designed for a pro dev coder. I'm coming in every day, I'm cranking out tons of code.
Yeah.
That's why, for example, Ultimate also has the architecture features. So if you're an enterprise architect and I'm designing and I'm doing layering and trying to figure out where should all the subsystems live and that kind of stuff, those are features that are in Ultimate as well, so they all kind of go together.
Sure. And of course, those are features that took time to implement, and it's, not everything can be free. Everybody wants
even
software
though we
to
give
be
away
free.
A lot of free
we
Visual
certainly
Studio.
Do. Yes. And hey, I think the Express stuff is brilliant. I think it always has been.
And
So back to LightSwitch. Will LightSwitch support Metro style apps for Win8 WP8?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. So LightSwitch, the version that we have right now does not support directly building a Windows 8 Metro style package.
Okay.
Right, so the apex that gets installed in the store and that kind of stuff. What you will be able to do, of course, is we support right inside of the browser. So either the HTML client or the existing client that we have, when you launch that, it will run inside of the browser. So if you're in the kind of modern browser that comes up when you're in the Metro interface, then it'll launch and pull in there like that. At some point, we quite likely will look at being able to directly target it. This had more to do with just the timing of the projects.
Sure.
Most of the work that we've done for Windows 8 and Metro has been trying to get the core developer construction scenarios, get the tools, build your projects, profile, debug, build things, be able to post to the store. Those are the things we needed to work on with Windows in this time frame in order to get everything done. So
sure.
I expect in the future, we'll add something like that, but it's not in the current version yet.
Excellent. Great question. Keep them coming, everybody. When writing Windows 8 apps, should I be using C++ or one of the other languages?
Yeah, the good news is they all work very well. I mean, so we have first-class support for C++, Visual Basic, C#, and JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And so to me, this one comes down to factors like which language are you most proficient in, right? Which one is your favorite, or I'm actually most efficient in doing that. Sometimes people may already have assets. So for example, if I've written a Windows Phone application and I'd like to do a Win8 Metro version of that, then if it was written in C#, just use C#. And in fact, you can even use some of your XAML markup. Here you'll change it because your phone's this big and slates are like this or huge screens.
Yes.
I probably want to make some design changes on what the UX looks like. But C++, if you're experienced in C++, it's combined with a XAML markup language, and it's pretty awesome for that. You can build really powerful applications. When you get Windows 8 and you go look at all the applications that are there, you will actually see examples written in all of those languages with both markups. The store, for example, is a HTML application. But there's other apps in there that are XAML and managed code and, et cetera.
Absolutely. And a lot of the UI controls are written as C++ components underneath, right?
Yes, we have a good combination because you're sitting on, so the underlying core, of course, at some point we always transition over to C++.
Sure. Right on.
C++ goes all the way down to the metal.
It does, man.
Yes.
All right, so... At C Results, loved SPA and MVC4 beta. Is there a timeline for when it will return?
Not a timeline yet. The SBA, single page applications, we got a version of that into beta. I think people were very interested in getting that in there, so we'd love the feedback. The team felt that it wasn't quite ready yet, and it was not ready to dock with the final version of the product. Okay. So rather than putting something in that they felt was not quite done yet, they did pull it out for the RC. Mm-hmm. They are actively working on it. So the way you should hear that is that the team is working on it. They are making progress against it. So they will have it ready to go, but it's not going to be in the RC or the RTM. But my guess is they will make a version of it available that will run on top of the final version that we ship.
Awesome. And I think it's really interesting. I found out recently at, I believe it was TechEd North America, the Bing front-end servers, of course, are all Windows Server 2012, which has .NET 4.5 on board, and they're doing MVC4 ASP.NET.
Yes.
And it's apparently working quite well. I mean, it's out there right now.
Yep.
So it's nice to see ASP.NET and .NET in general great on the server doing great work, but scaling to that dimension.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, has it been tested like that before in reality?
Ton of our online properties have actually been running with the .NET framework on the back end since, our first versions we did was way back in version 1 and version 1.1. 2.0, we did a significant amount as well. Microsoft.com, MSN, bunch of these very, very large sites. And those, of course, are just the Microsoft properties. Mm. So we've absolutely, every release that we come out with the framework, we go through and test. We're not done until we have tens of thousands of machines that are scaling and cranking through that.
Awesome.
And that's, of course, why the CLR has a couple of different garbage collectors, right? Because there's a server garbage collector that's designed specifically to scale out across the machine and, frankly, up with heap affinitation.
Heap gets pretty big, man.
There's a parallel question, right? I mean, it's designed so you can do separation. The GC is actually smart enough that when it does allocations, it does CPU affinity.
Mm.
Okay, so even though the heaps themselves get big, it does them in such a way that I'm only touching references on this chip, right, this core, based on this part of the heap, because a bus lock where I have to stop all CPUs makes the machine stop.
Mm.
So there's actually that level of sophistication to help with the scale-up. Which is different than the client. So just a trivia down here about
That's the best kind of trivia. Moni Stevens.
Yes.
Moni, she's a rock star dev.
Yep.
And, of course, Patrick Dessou, the architect.
Yep, the godfather of GC, yes.
Yeah, he's great, man. So is Moni. She's fun to talk to. Super dev. So heard that fakes will only be an ultimate. If fakes are used in the project, will other SKUs be able to work in it? What is a fake?
I'm
not aware of that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. When you're doing testing in particular, fakes allows you to go stub out interfaces.
Ah.
And so I can do like dependency injection, kind of testing and verify. So if I'm programming against that interface, I run fakes and I get, kind of a mocked up version of that. Now I'm able to do and separate my testing. And then, we talked about modern development practices, another great example of, kind of separating things out.
Mm.
So fakes will go off and be able to run in Ultimate when you run the thing through. Now, fakes itself is designed to go generate those objects and everything else. Those do get checked in. What does wind up happening after that is that as you go back and execute, for doing builds and those sorts of things, those will go off and go run. So it's a lot more, believer on the authoring environment and those sort of things when I do the generation. But we still need to have team build work so you can actually kick things off, and then that's usually where we wind up with some of the separation.
Excellent. So the final question I'll ask you is, what's top of mind for you right now? Shipping, maybe?
Shipping.
But anything else?
Shipping.
Understood. That's...
Yeah. Yeah.
It just must be monumental.
Yeah. No, I mean, the good news is this release has been really good. We have... because I will say we've used Scrum Agile practices, we use the product. Every time we go build a new version, we try and pull in the features that would have helped us do a better job. And one of the things you'll see is we're actually using half the milestones for this product release, and yet we are developing a brand new Windows, content interface, et cetera, adding a ton of ALM and the rest of it. So that sort of process has been extremely good for us. Now, top of mind for me is really planning out, in particular, that next big round of DevOps, really. If I had to pick just one thing, which of course is hard, it's a huge, huge product. We've got tons of things happening all over the place. But as a theme, DevOps and really tuning the time that we can go from I've got an idea, I want to implement a feature, and I want to get it deployed in customers' hands and really tune that, we're spending a significant amount of time figuring that out and adding more value in there.
Excellent. Perfect. Well, hey, great to talk to you as always, Jason.
Thank you. You too.
It's nice to have an engineer in the VP ranks. All right,
Microsoft.
Guys. So listen, thank you for tuning in. It's been a long, wonderful day. And thanks for tweeting your questions. And good night, Amsterdam.